Great silence for me. I've always felt that life is deciding what one's priorities are. And many of you who've been in business, they spend endless years trying to ask you to set your goals and things. What I'm going to attempt to do tonight is to look back and tell you what my priorities turned out to be and see if I can pinpoint the people and events going way back that actually caused a particular priority to happen. Now, some of these people are in this room. Some of these people, I don't know what their names were, but they had an amazing effect on my life, and I want to pay tribute to them tonight. And as you hear that, bear in mind what an effect you may be having on somebody else's life without even realizing it. So I'm going to go through these in chronological sequence. And the first one is up on the screen. But at the end, you will see what I consider to be the significance and which are the most important. And bear in mind that there are cases where something couldn't possibly have happened if it hadn't been for something else prior to it. So I'm going to bare my soul just a little bit here, but like I said, it's my party. So I want to take you back to the late days. No, it was after the end of the war, because I was born in 1941, in the middle of the war. And I was about 7 or 8 when my father brought home something that really changed the total direction of my life. Well, I didn't have a direction in those days, so he said it. He brought home an electric train set. And I don't know how many of you know what life was like in London in 1947-48, but right, my father, who was a very experienced and had a whole string of engineering qualifications, he was a Whitworth scholar from Manchester University, and by this stage he was in the army. But he thought it was about time that I got introduced to things mechanical and electrical. So along came the train set, which I absolutely loved, just looking at it. And what we did was we plugged it in into an electric train set. And as you know, you have to have a transformer to bring the voltage down to what the train will accept. Well, our little transformer went up in a puff of smoke because he had not realized that our house was powered with DC. And as I'm sure all you engineers know, don't do too good to stick a transformer into DC power supply. The reason this is significant is he had to explain to me why my new train set was a complete heap of smoking stuff. And I got my first lesson in electrical circuit design and so on at that age. Moving on a few years, I couldn't understand why the other kids at school didn't understand about sinusoidal waves and all sorts of other things like that. Well, they hadn't been through this wonderful experience. So it is true to say that, first of all, it got me playing with my Meccano set, my favorite toy. I used to dream what I was going to make with Meccano while I was away at school and come home and spend the whole of my holidays making these remarkable things with Meccano. And then when I went to secondary school and so on, and university, I studied maths and physics and things like that. I blame all that on the smoking transformer. When I was in about 1955, I guess, a man called Lonnie Donegan was having successive number one hits in England. And but I'm going to come back to music in one or two other areas. At this stage, some of us believe that Lonnie Donegan was quite influential on the Beatles. And if somebody just holds up that book right behind you, sweetheart, those of you who may not have seen this wonderful, wonderful book written by... No, it is. John, Paul, George and Ringo. Have a look at it while you're here if you want to. And Lonnie Donegan's record of Rock Island Line, is a picture of it right in the front. I have the 78 of Rock Island Line. So, that's our theory anyway. And where's John? Is he around, John Whelan? John, I'm going to introduce as my partner on the Ottawa Beatles website. I stick the stuff up, he does all the research and tells me when I got things wrong, And we've been doing this successfully for 3 or 4 years now, and the Audible Beatles website is quite well appreciated on a worldwide basis. The Beatles really turned me on to music. I liked pop music before that, but the Beatles made me realize that this was a significant movement. And I want to tell you that every year's passed, I've got more pleasure and fun out of popular music in general, and the Beatles in particular. And that continues now. They are far and away the most popular band ever, certainly if you measure it by websites. And we're quite heavily into that sort of thing. They have. But music doesn't stop with Beatles. I also love lots of other types of music, classical music, jazz, and so on. In fact, I would say that if ever I'm in a tough spot, I get more solace from listening to music than I would normally like to admit, but I'm admitting it to you. And going back to my father, gosh, he does play quite a role. I suppose that's not surprising. Dad was in the army, and he liked the service life, and he thought it was a good thing for one of his sons. He wasn't sure that he wanted both of his sons to go into it, and I was number one. But he had certain problems with the army, and so he thought the Navy might be a better bet. I remember thinking that if I was going to die in war, I didn't really fancy the idea of dying in a muddy trench, and I didn't like the idea of being shot down out of the sky. But what I liked about the Navy was that you could live in fairly pleasant surroundings, in a nice room and cabin, right up to the day when the water started lapping up underneath your bed. And I figured that was probably the best one. I also discovered at an early age that when I went to the Navy at age 15 to be sort of checked out to see if I was Navy material, and they served us the most wonderful food. It was a curry. I can still remember it. And I said to myself, if they serve food like this in this thing, I'm in. And the food continued till when I left in 1971. It was always good. Navy food is excellent. And right, best cooks in the business. There was a story on, I was on Ark Royal, and there was a story that the cooks, one day, one of them ended up with one less finger than he started out with, and we never discovered where the finger was. But it might have been in one of those dishes that they were serving up. My father was really quite influential in helping me realize that the Navy was where I ought to go. But bless him, because it also gave me an engineering degree, which the Navy paid for at Cambridge, which was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I never heard my mother criticize anything I did, seriously, other than just, you know, like, getting myself dirty when I was a kid. And it, no, she never did that. And I really value that, because I've done some pretty strange things in my life, some of which we won't go into tonight. And my mum was always there for me and never, ever tried to fend me off after one of these events. And I love her dearly for that. And maybe she'll hear these words. So, mum, it has been, for me, just a blessing to have lived these years and to have you right there behind me. Somebody who has been incredibly influential in my life is Anne-Marie Coppel. Some of you may know her. I know Brooke and Rosie know her very well. I first met, and she was going to come tonight, and at the last minute they weren't able to make it, Anne-Marie and Wayne, so that's a pity. I first met Anne-Marie back in about 1972 or 73. She was visiting England at the time because she lived in Ottawa. And she has stayed in a hotel on the Norfolk coast in a place called Cromer, a wonderful fishing village up there just north of Norfolk, of Norwich. And she said this hotel was great. And my wife Penny and I decided we would go and stay for a holiday and take our two children, James and Debbie, to the hotel in Cromer. Now, I should go back and say that when I was 11 years old, I went to a scout camp in Sheringham, which is about 5 miles from Cromer. And it was heaven. I just thought, this place is just unbelievable. I'd never forgotten how wonderful it was being in a camp on the cliff tops with the sea below, a couple of hundred feet, I guess, and maybe 100 feet, and it had been in my mind ever since. And so we had the opportunity at that stage of my career, I worked for a computer company called Data General, and I had the territory of East Anglia, or much of it, as my sales territory. And I persuaded the company to let me live in Sheringham, which was great because they paid my gasoline costs to go to London all the time, and they paid for my subsistence meals and what have you. So I was in seventh heaven, living in Sheringham and yet holding down a job in London. That would never have happened had Anne-Marie not suggested the hotel in Cromer. However, that's a minor point, because years later, after my divorce from Penny, I came over here to Ottawa, and Anne-Marie and I fell in love. And that was in 1986, and that brought me to Canada. People often ask me, why did you come to Canada? And there's only one answer that anybody ever drops everything and goes from one continent to another, and it is, all you need is love. Anyway, it was Anne-Marie, therefore, that brought me to Canada. And I wouldn't know any of you people if it hadn't been for her. It has been... I've often people sometimes say, would you go back to England? No way. I like it here. I like being able to turn right on red. I like to know what my income... I know what my income tax is going to be every year and settle up with the government. In England, you never have the chance to do that. You never know if you owe them money or they owe you money. And there's a few other things I like about Canada, but mostly all you people who I've got to know since then. It's been wonderful. So I'm sorry that Anne-Marie isn't here. We got divorced in 98. Thank you. And I'm quite experienced in divorce. And I want to tell you, and I've said this to many of my clients, I want to tell you that it is absolutely crucial, if you're going through separation and divorce, to remain friends with your ex-spouse. It is absolutely 100% crucially important to do that. Otherwise, life can be very, very awful. And I'm glad that I've been able to do that with Anne-Marie, and we still consider ourselves to be good friends with one another. And indeed, with her fiancé, Wayne. And that takes me back to wife number one, Penny. I met Penny at Cambridge University in 1959 at a party. And I always think of the song in South Pacific, Some Enchanted Evening, Across a Crowded Room, because that was exactly how it was with Penny and me. And we courted for about 4 years before I finally asked her to marry me, and we got married in 1965. And we have two children, James and Debbie. When I was very young, at age 5, I went to a Catholic school, and they taught me about God, and they got it in pretty well, in a way that I haven't really forgotten. I'm not Catholic, I was Church of England, but it was the closest school, and sometimes it was a good thing to do. My mother sent me there. In my, I guess when I was about 27 or 28, I decided that God didn't exist, that there was no such thing as God, and that it was pointless wasting my time even spending any of my intellectual effort even thinking about it. By the way, I think that's a perfectly valid point of view. If God isn't there, why should we even think about it? The point of view I have trouble with is when we believe God exists, but we don't do anything about it. And Penny had a wonderful faith. So while I was going through a period of regular atheism, Penny kept her faith and just lived the life that had a big influence on me, because I could see how important it was to her. And I have many things to thank Penny for, but that is the main thing, that she never gave up on me. She didn't give me any hard sell about Christianity, but she just lived a good Christian life, and it made a big impression on me because I saw her there all the time doing this. Those of you who used to look forward to 1984 because of George Orwell's book will remember that we all thought the world was going to be amazingly different in 1984. All sorts of incredible things, people living underground and that. And 84 came, and none of that happened. It's rather like Y2K. You know. For me, in early 1984, I started seeing posters around London of a man who was called Louis Palau. I had no idea who he was, but he sure had a lot of influential friends in the advertising agency Saatchi & Saatchi there, because they were putting up his picture all over London. And I began subconsciously to be thinking, well, who on earth is Luis Palau? I saw a television program when he was interviewed, and it explained that Luis Palau was an Argentinian evangelist who was going to be doing a mission for several weeks at Queen's Park Rangers football ground in London. Now, you're familiar with mass evangelism meetings of the sort that Billy Graham does, and I'd actually seen Billy Graham in Norwich earlier that year. So in the space of a few months, I actually took in two of the world's greatest evangelists. I went to see Luis on the 19th of June, 1984. I can still remember walking into that stadium. I think the song they were singing was Over a Thousand Tongues. And it was a huge crowd, and this hymn was coming at me. I took my seat and listened to Luis Palau for the first time. It had an incredible impression on me. I'll just say that normally people go to these missions and that's it. I went back eight more times to see Luis Palau. I just couldn't keep away. It was so fantastic. In fact, they extended his time in London by about 3 weeks, because there were plenty of other people like me who wanted to do that. So Luis has been very important in my life, because he basically explained to me that Jesus was not some distant, and God were not some distant people that we read about in books, but they were people that could be my personal friend, and I could talk to them. And furthermore, I better be talking to them, because after all, they did create the world. And I think that deserved a fair amount of interest and respect. So I changed fairly rapidly from a position of absolutely no belief to one of fairly strong belief. I'm making this much shorter than it really was, because there are a number of other events that in that sequence. If you really want to dig into it, it's all up on the certain page on the web. We'll come back to that later. Oh, I was going through marriage breakup at that time, 1985, 86. It was a tough time for me. I can still remember the day when Penny said to me that a doctor had suggested that I shouldn't live in the same house as my daughter. I had no idea why he would have suggested that, but I certainly didn't want to upset my daughter, Debbie. And so I left that night and went and lived in a book in Norwich, where I met a lady who is still a friend, who lives in Sierra Leone and is going through a lot of tough times. It was a tough period, but it was because at that time my faith had been strengthened that I was able to handle it reasonably well. So we kept on going, breathing in, breathing out. 1986, I'd been working in London as a manager in Data General with a team of people reporting to me, and I'd been living in Sheringham. It was not an ideal situation for the strength of my marriage. I don't recommend it to anybody, by the way, that kind of commuting. It just doesn't work out. And I could handle it. I thought I could handle it. I thought that for the sake of the kids, getting them through fairly expensive schooling and so on, it was worth a price to pay. But my marriage was getting steadily worse. I got a telephone call from a recruiting person, a headhunter, in 1986, who said, and I see if I can remember the conversation, he said, "We're interested in employing you." I said, "Really? How on earth do you know anything about me?" He says, "Well, we've been checking up." And I said, "Well, I have no interest in a different job, because I'm very happy with my company. So unless the job is in Norwich, then thank you very much." He said, "It is." So, so I said, "Oh, really?" Well, about 3 weeks later, I trotted off to Norwich for an interview. And I discovered that this job was in the financial services industry, and with a company called Allied Dunbar, which is rather like Investors Group is to Canada. Allied Dunbar is the British Investors Group. And I now know, of course, that if I said that I lived in Land's End, he'd have said, "Well, yes, that's where the job is," because that's the way it worked. Right? I wasn't too sophisticated. And I decided that this would be good, because it would get me back living at home. Now, I couldn't move immediately. I had too many responsibilities, but they kept the job available for me till the end of the year. About 5 or 6 months later, I went and joined Allied Dunbar. Here's a little bit of feedback for you. If you've been living as a weekly commuter for a couple of years and then you move back into the family, It's not too easy for anybody. It didn't work. In fact, that brought things to a head. So having dad around all day long was not good. So I've already told you how I left home prior to that. When I came to Canada in 1987, I decided that it would not be sensible to stay in the financial services industry because I didn't really know what dollars were. So it would be better to go back and live and work for Data General because I did know what computers were. So I called my old boss, who by then was the country manager for Data General Canada. His name is Brian Childs, and said, "Would you give me a job? Because if you give me a job, I can get immigration to Canada." And he said, "Sure. Draft a letter and I'll sign it and send it back," which was rather nice because I had worked for him directly. So now I had the way into Canada. As probably you know, if you don't have a job to come to here, it's rather more difficult to immigrate. In fact, it can be impossible. And when you come here without a job, then you are competing with everybody. In my case, I came here with a job to go to. I started in Toronto, as everybody does. And Anne-Marie and I lived together in Toronto for about 3 months. And she could not stand it. She had been an Ottawa girl for 20 years. And she basically said, "We're going to have to live in Ottawa." And I went to the company and I said, "Will you please let me move to Ottawa?" And they said, "No." And things were a little bit worrisome for a while. There was a project being run here in Ottawa called the COSIX project, which many computer companies were competing for. And they needed extra people on the project team in the Data General Ottawa office. So here was me. They knew I was interested in Ottawa. They said, "Okay, you can go up to Ottawa and work on this project." I went into the Data General Ottawa office and met Rick Wilson and Bob Thibault. I thought that both Rick and Bob might have been able to be here tonight. They're good friends of mine. This is a couple of men, the like of whom I'd never met before in the computer industry. And it opened my eyes to the differences between doing this same job in England and doing it here in Canada. And I discovered all sorts of interesting differences. Remember, it was the same company, the same products, it was just a different geography. The most important thing I discovered was that here, if you wanted to go and meet somebody, however senior or however elevated they were in a company or in the government, you just phoned them up and made an appointment. It was not able to do that in England. It would have been considered an amazing breakthrough if you could ever get to speak to any senior person in the higher reaches of companies. So to me, this was like, wow, you can do that? I can sell lots of computers in that case because I can get to meet the people. Bob and Rick were kind of like a dynamic duo. We all worked together on this project. We had a lot of fun. We worked round the clock numbers of times, you know, doing all-nighters. And I got to know this couple, and they're still two of my best friends. And I really have enjoyed Rick Wilson and Bob Thibault, and now they're family, so I know very well. So it was a whole new feel for me, doing business the Canadian way, and I loved it. The first thing that I did when I arrived in Toronto in 1987 off the aircraft, I think it was even while I was in the airport lounge and I had a little time to kill, I picked up the phone book and looked up financial services companies and phoned the Prudential. And I said, "I need a financial planner." And this is fairly unusual, by the way, because normally financial planners have to go out and find their clients. But I'd been a financial planner, so I knew that I needed one. I had to discover what dollars were, remember? So they actually said to me, they took me in, quite a senior man in the Pru, and he said, "I think the company you're looking for is Investors Group," because the Pru was primarily into life insurance, and I wanted something slightly more broad. It was within 3 months later, when I had moved here to Ottawa, and I didn't finish the story, but I did finally persuade Data General to move me to Ottawa. It was when they discovered I didn't expect them to pay the moving costs that they said, "Fine." Then, of course, I claimed it on my income tax. And I went to a the Hazeldene Mall, where Investors Group had a booth. Now, you've probably seen the kind of booths that financial services companies have. And sitting in this booth, reading a newspaper, was a man called Steve Goebel. So I knocked on his paper and said, I might be interested in talking to you and becoming a client. And Steve and I have been the best of friends ever since. First of all, I and Anne-Marie were his clients for several years. And then when I was finally heaved out of the computer industry in 1994, I called Steve, and having not managed to find myself another job at my exalted age, which you can probably calculate since you know how old I was yesterday, and it finally dawned on me, with a lot of help from Anne-Marie, that I was no longer should be pointing myself at the high-tech industry, but more the financial service industry, which I already knew a fair amount about. So I called Steve and said, Steve, would you give me a job? And he said, yes. He didn't even ask me for a resume, which was rather kind of him. And so quite rapidly after that, I found myself working for Investors Group. Now, Steve was my boss for quite a while. He's still my boss. He is the regional director in our Ottawa office. He was the chairman of the Canadian Association of Financial Planners. So he's a fine mentor, and I'm very fond of Steve. And indeed, I'm fond of Investors Group. I've been very fortunate in my life. I have worked for two companies particularly, Data General and Investors Group, which I consider to be the kind of companies I'm totally comfortable in, and I like the people at all levels. We met Carrie Gagne once. Anne-Marie went to work one day, and she needed some cleansing lotion. She'd run out, and Carrie had a bottle of cleansing lotion, which he was prepared to sell to Anne-Marie. Anne-Marie brought it home. I can still remember after she'd used it, she said, I have never used a skincare product like this in my life. Those were her exact words. She called Carrie a couple of days later and said, I need to get some more of your products, and Carrie invited us over to a presentation. We went, the two of us, because I'd read that the company that marketed this product was Nu Skin, and it was a multi-level marketing company, and I was intrigued by the way in which they did business. Well, we joined up. We signed up that night. That was nearly 10 years ago. You got it, Patricia! So there you are. I've been using Nu Skin for about 10 years, skincare and nutrition products, antioxidants, and probably now there must be several thousand other people in the world who have been introduced to Nu Skin as a direct result of that, because we've brought hundreds of people into the Nu Skin family. So that's rather nice. So still benefit enormously from Nu Skin. I haven't had a month since 1991, April, that I haven't earned a commission check from the company, but I hardly do any work at it these days. I just send out a newsletter once a month on email, and people buy, because once they've got those products, they don't want to not have them. And yes, Patricia, thanks for that suggestion. When people ask me, why do I look a little bit younger than they'd think, I do use methods. It's not just a fluke, and I'd recommend it to anybody. Just a little aside, you may have seen a certain man in the press a couple of days ago. I'm going to show you a very early picture of this man. Anybody recognize him? Alan Rock. This is Alan Rock in 1969, when he arranged for John and Yoko to meet, come around to a peace event in Ottawa, at Ottawa University. And Alan was their chaperone and drove around with John in his Beetle. And Alan had his prostate op 2 days ago. We read about it, and there's a test that everybody of our age should have, the PSA test, and I signed up for my test today.
It's not just of your age.
Right.
Yes.
Just of my gender. I won't be positive, because I've been eating Life Pack for about 9 years now, and so there's no way I can have it, but just a good check. I guess it was, oh dear, the year escapes me. It must have been 6 years ago that a friend of mine from New Skin, Kevin Ogilvy, said, we're going to go and meet a man who has a website. I thought, that sounds interesting. I had no idea what the internet was in those days, but I thought, maybe somebody can explain. I was in the situation where I didn't know what I didn't know, so it was totally confusing. We went out to see Mike Braganza. He has a site. It's called CyberPages. He was one of the very first e-commerce sites, probably in Canada. And I was just blown away by what I saw that night. I saw a computer that was able to get information from other computers anywhere and bring that information here so we could see it. I couldn't believe it. It was quite extraordinary. It made a huge impression on me. I decided that I've been using email since 1980. I was one of the earlier people to use email, so it has been part of my life. But the World Wide Web was just very impressive to me. Derek Lawless is Anne-Marie's nephew, and he was right into the Internet. He introduced me to Freenet, National Capital Freenet, and told me how I could get myself online with Freenet and so on. And since then, the Internet has been a major part of my life. There must be several numbers of people in this room here who I met purely as a result of the Internet, one of them in particular. And if I go and look at the friends I have these days, quite a lot of them I met through the Internet. George, for example, he was reading part of my website when he was in Shenzhen in China before he came here. And he knew he was coming over here, so he set up an email correspondence. He knew I had some accommodation, and he said, Tony, might we come and stay? So I said, sure. And when he arrived, it turned out he knew more about me than I knew myself, because he'd been studying on the website. And he particularly had been studying a thing called the Kanata Group, which is a group of people that I have breakfast with once a month, and Michelle is one of those. So George came along to the next meeting of the Kanata Group, and it was a lot of fun because he was telling them that he'd sort of knew them from when he was in China. And those of you who design websites, if there are a few in this room, you probably know already that getting people to look at your website, who are your own nearest and dearest and everybody else, is real difficult. But it's quite easy to get people from Timbuktu and Japan and Hong Kong and China to reach your website. It's just one of those little anomalous places. So the Internet has been big for me ever since. I had first met Bob and Pat Horsey, who are here tonight, I guess about 95 or something. They were friends of Anne-Marie's. They were in the Kanata Theater, which I used to go to just about every play. And Bob called me up one day in 97 and said, have you ever heard of Alpha? And I said, no. And he said, I think you should hear about Alpha. And I said, not really interested in that, but, you know, what is it? Typical negative way. And he said, it's a course about Christianity. Well, that got my attention, but I wasn't particularly interested. So I didn't do anything about it. And I remember Bob coming around to my front door, which we all came into one day, personally. I don't think I knew he was coming. And he said, Tony, you've got to come to this thing. It's fantastic. Just come and have roast beef dinner with us tonight and get a taste of it. So the roast beef attracted me, and I went to Trinity Presbyterian, and it was billed as Nicky Gumbel. I didn't know who Nicky Gumbel was, and I looked around at all the hello, my name is tags to see if I could find Nicky Gumbel, and he didn't seem to be there, so I thought he must be late, and I wondered how they were going to do the show without him. We had this wonderful dinner, roast beef, beautifully cooked, and I met lots of interesting people, and there must have been about 35, 40 people there, and they all seemed to be a good group. And after we'd had dinner, we had a little bit of fun and some jokes. Bob told a couple of jokes. And after that, it turned out we were going to watch a video. And now I figured it. Okay, it's a video, and it was Nicky Gumbel on the video. So we went into the church sanctuary, and again, I was totally skeptical. I didn't know what on earth this was. About 10 minutes later, after having seen Nicky Gumbel talking about his experiences when he had originally thought that Christianity was boring, irrelevant, and untrue, and showing how he changed his mind. I think I remember taking out my day timer and crossing out everything I was going to be doing on Wednesdays for the next 13 weeks, and I decided that I was going to come on the course. Why is this significant? Well, from being a member on that Alpha course, and I remember that was the first time I met Ray and Lorna Brulé, because that we had a weekend on the Alpha. And the next course, I was able to do a little bit of group leading, and then I imported Alpha into my own church, and I've run a number of Alpha courses since then. In fact, we've run courses in various places. Today, I'm helping to run Alpha in the maximum security wing on the Ottawa Carlton Detention Center on Innes Road. So every Sunday afternoon, I get to meet some delightful people from the prison, and I have to tell you, they are delightful people. They're charming and nice. I was worried. I thought they would be all nasty, sort of your caricature of what a convict would be. The first thing I discovered, they're all teenagers, these people. This is the max, remember? And they need help and guidance. And we've seen some remarkable things, just getting to see these men and meeting with them, all led by Church Army Captain Bob Stewart, who does a lot of this sort of work here. So Alpha has been really big for me. Yeah, I want to just go back to a week after I'd gone to that first Alpha meeting. Went back to the first meeting in the series. It was called, the video was called "Who Is Jesus?" And Nikki Gumbel took me right back to my Catholic school days in the age of 5 and told me what I had known since then, that God and Jesus are the same and within the Trinity. And so on. But he explained it in the perfect way. About 3 days later, there was a headline in the Ottawa Citizen paper, and it was a headline written by Bob Harvey, and he had interviewed with some of his fellow people on the Citizen, Bill Phipps, moderator of the United Church. I didn't tell you that when I came to Ottawa, after checking out all the churches around here, I decided to join the United Church because they seem friendly people. So here, the head of my church had just made a statement which was completely 180 degrees out of phase with Nikki Gumbel's statement at Alpha 3 days later. I was galvanized into some action. I wrote a letter to the Citizen, and I started the moderator website, which collected all the many news items, most of which were up on the Ottawa Citizen webpage, which, by the way, is one of the best newspaper webpages in Canada and possibly in the world. They put just about everything up there, and they leave it there. They don't take it down. And so we now had a lot of activity going on where I was sort of documenting this. And I took a lot of interest in what was going on. I even met Bill Phipps at one stage. I was involved in a phone-in with about 8 or 9 like-minded people to myself, asking Bill what he thought he was doing. I still have the tape of that. And the reason I'm telling you this story is that this web page used to get quite a lot of mail. I used to get emails from people, ministers, lay people, and so on. And I used to post the ones which I thought were part of a good, significant line. And I was putting pros and cons and everything up on the page. Every week there were more emails. And then I got an email from somebody called Lorianne Zakhar on March the 11th, 1998. And again, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with running websites, it's extremely rare for anyone to send you a message saying, "We like your site." It's very rare. It does happen. And so when I got a message from Lorianne saying, "Your site has allowed me to do a thesis on the Bill Phipps controversy in the United Church. Thank you for putting it up there. I'm finding it very useful." So it warmed the cockles of my heart. I thought, this is good. I like this. This girl sounds interesting. So I actually replied to the email and said, "Thank you for your comments. I really appreciate it. We don't get too many like that here." And I sent that back. And then she replied to me. And her this one was a little bit longer, and it led to this ever-increasing, exponentially growing volume of emails going between us. We never call each other. I had no idea what she looked like or anything like that, but I was really enjoying this communication. Lorianne found, and I found a sort of a wavelength that we were able to communicate on, and we discussed lots and lots of things, Christianity, music, everything else. We had all sorts of things in common. It was remarkable. So I finally figured with my slow brain that it might be interesting to meet her, and invited her to come up to the Billy Graham mission on June 1998. And she said yes. And she brought her friend Ron with her, as he was also interested in coming to the mission. And Ron and Lorianne came up, and I still remember when she appeared on my doorstep there, and I saw her for the first time. I remember I'd not seen what she looked like, and it was 100% different from the way I'd imagined her in my mind. From her writing, and she sent me poems and things like that, I'd imagined a sort of very sophisticated, elegant lady. And what I really saw when I saw Lorianne was an incredibly welcoming smile. I now know that she had to take a lot of courage in her hands to come up and appear on the doorstep, but she did it. And so that's imprinted on my brain, seeing her for the first time. She stayed for the weekend. We did Billy Graham. I was a counselor. I went to all the events, and we went to several of them together. And when she left at the end of the weekend, I remember saying goodbye to her. There wasn't anything particularly that had erupted in my mind in terms of our relationship. But over the next few days, I discovered that I was missing her, and it was getting serious, and I was missing her very, very badly. And it was about, you'll know how many days later it was. July 10th. So I picked up the phone and called her and said, Lorianne, I have something to tell you. I'm in love with you. And so she said, well, what did you say? So that was quite a feat. Well, since then, I have to tell you all that we have just been living what I consider, and I do have that experience, remember, an idyllic marriage where I still maintain we've never had a cross word. We've had one or two slight raises in the level. But here's the crux of this. We had got to know each other so well before we ever met. We were mind brothers and sisters. I don't care, frankly. She could have had one leg. I don't think it would make any difference. And it has been a very, very strong relationship, and I'm delighted to tell everybody that in public, because I enjoy it every second of the day. Now, I think that the